Thanksgiving. Welcome to National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, rvrepublicbroadcasting.org. It is your parade of free speech. Because I don't know about you, but what did I do on Thanksgiving? Well, today is Thanksgiving, and this morning I went down to State Street, that great street, and I watched a bit of a parade. They had a lot of floats. They had a lot of marching bands. The Lorax, who even knows the Lorax nowadays? But I saw the Lorax.
On State Street, that great street.
I saw him getting deflated. What does that even mean? But what else did I do while I was at the parade? Well, I had a long, very long conversation with Dr. Duke about the shenanigans of these Jews and their shenanigans. And it's too much for one show. It's going to get divided into two shows. I don't know what day I'm playing these shows, because I've already have my Thanksgiving show and my Friday after Thanksgiving, my Black Friday show. They've already in the can sent into RBN. But you'll hear these sooner or later. But anyway, so without further ado, enjoy.
On the war in Israel with former minister for Middle East, for the Middle East, Ivan Lewis, probably, I don't know, was that from Great Britain or America or whatever, I don't know who
Lewis, Ivan Lewis is very often a Jewish name.
And then with author Miko Peled, P-E-L-E-D, who apparently, from what they're saying, is Jewish himself. So the announcer was Jewish, the other guy was Jewish, and this guy's Jewish, but Pilo has, or Peled, has been a pretty intelligent debater, and they're talking about the war, and Ivan Lewis keeps interrupting Peled, but, you know, it's just interesting. I was just noticing some of the aspects of it, and I noticed that you and I have talked a lot on the program, and we really like to go to the facts on the ground. We like to go to the facts that are, in effect, irrefutable facts that really kind of help. It's just the same thing like with the epidemic. If you want to talk about the vaccine effectiveness, you can talk about models and you can talk about tests done by Pfizer, but the way to find out if the vaccine was effective, you look at countries that employed the vaccine, what were their rates of infection, what were their death rates and so forth, and you look at countries that didn't. Or if you look at lockdowns or mask wearing or whatever, it's more of an empirical approach, a scientific approach. And so one of the things that I notice is that a lot of the fundamentals of this whole narrative, it begins with October 7, because October 7, and I've been watching a lot of videos, been watching a lot of news broadcasts, a lot of excerpts from CNN and major media, a lot of these just start out with the horrific, the terrible, the terrorist, the murderous attack of Hamas on Israeli civilians that took place on October 7. And in most of the cases, they come up with these incredible emotional, heart-wrenching narratives, like speaking about beheading. Like, for instance, this Ivan Lewis came up. In fact, this has been refuted in the Israeli press greatly. It's been refuted by the Israeli military. It's been refuted by the Israeli government. In fact, the whole beheading story of 40 Israeli babies beheaded. The story the government put out about the rape of the woman paraded in the streets of Gaza, that's also been refuted very effectively in a lot of Israeli media. But they always come up with these kind of talking points. And one thing I noticed is that Miko Peled, I guess that's how you pronounce his name, that he really didn't just hit the facts on the ground. And the facts on the ground are pretty clear. These Palestinians, they lost about 6,000 Palestinians just so far this century by Israeli bombings and killings, and both in the West Bank and Gaza and so forth. So this has been an ongoing war. It wasn't like this was the first task. And we're not even having to go back to 48. We can look at the studies that have been done and the number of the enormous damage has been done to Gaza, which has no airplanes, no big bombs, you know, no tanks.
One other quick point.
Or anything.
One other quick
point.
Hello?
So you had thousands of Palestinians who died. many more thousands who've been injured. You have tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, probably dwellings of people that have been destroyed. In fact, even in the West Bank, you had something like right now, according to what I'm reading, 15 Palestinian settlements on the West Bank that have been wiped out by Israel under the cover of this war. But anyway, so but the narrative never seems to. I'm sorry for such a long introduction here. I'm just trying to catch up where we were.
And I don't think
but the narrative never seems to really go into the basics of what happened on October 7th. And here's the facts we have. We know the names and even have pictures and the backgrounds of the Israeli victims because Israel really documents this quite well. And Haaretz has done this. And so we know we've got a very good idea of the Israelis who've even been taken hostage. We know the Israelis who died in this attack, allegedly by the Israeli government, it's 1,200. By the way, they had it to 1,400, but then they said that, well, the 200 of those that died, they were very badly burned. And the way they get burned like that is by these Hellfire rockets, the same kind of thing that America used against Iraq during the road of death coming back from Kuwait in that first Gulf War. And so which is weapons that these Palestinian glider people and ground forces just didn't have. And so they were saying 200 of these people weren't even they weren't Israeli victims. They were Hamas fighters who were burned beyond recognition. And when later they checked them out and investigated, they realized that 200 of the victims weren't 200, so they revised it from 1,400 to 1,200. But the point is, and they don't ever talk about this, that as Pilad talked about, this war has been going on for years, and there's been so many more Palestinian casualties, men, women, and children. I mean, Israel was founded by terrorism, and including a lot of massacres that they publicized, like Deir Yassin, which they committed crimes that are unspeakable. And every bit as horrible as what they say about Hamas allegedly did, which they didn't do, for instance, the beheading of children. But if you look at the facts on the ground, and there's two overwhelming facts. I'm just going to start with this first thing. I want to get your comments and we can go into this deeply. Okay, so if you look at the facts on the ground, okay, 1,200 Israelis, according to the government, died. So the allegation was, and they always bring up babies being beheaded. They always bring up women being raped and innocent women and children. And this was an attack against civilians and a terrible, terrible war crime and mass murder and so forth of a terrorist attack. So that's practically every time the conversation that comes up. It doesn't come up the Israeli response to this and what the Israelis have been doing to the Palestinians. It never comes up. When you get the facts on the ground, like the question would be for Pilate to say to his Jewish debater, and he's a Jew too, but the Jewish debate, his guy is debating, well, how many children, okay, we say 1,200 Israelis died. Well, how many children of the 1,200, how many children were there of the 1,200? And the Israeli government says the official number of the government is 30. Children. And then you look at goes on in Palestine, at least 40% to 50% of the people who died in Israel are Palestinian children who are obviously not combatants. If 50% of the Israelis died, there'd be 600 children, but there's not. There's 30 children. So you can argue that collateral damage can take place to 30 children. You can argue, but if you say this was a terrorist attack or this was an attack, just a vicious, horrible attack in terms of the evil of Hamas, in which 30 children died, how in the heck do they then not say that this overall indiscriminate massive bombing, 2,000 literally 2,000, there's something like 2,000 tons. There were more explosive power that went off in this small little area of the Gaza Strip, one of the most densely populated places in the world. There was almost two times the explosive power that went off in Nagasaki and Hiroshima and this area in terms of explosion. And you've had so far over 7,000 children are dying at 7,000, not 30, 7,000. But that's not called ever terrorism. It's never called a war crime by the mainstream media. It's never called a terrorist attack. And these children who are massacred and the homes that are destroyed and the purposeful starvation of the people there and the destruction of their able to have medicine, the babies that died because even the incubators wouldn't even work because there was no more power because of the Israeli cutoff of things that Palestinians need to live. This is not ever considered terrorism. It's not ever considered any sort of war crime. They don't start off the conversations by saying, okay, you're upset with what Hamas did when they attacked Israel, but it looks like it's a military attack. About half of the people who died were certainly military or institutional people, which, of course, Israel says is perfectly fine, even though people that are occupied have a right to resist physically and militarily to their occupiers. But the Jews had no right to massacre the people they're occupying. And so this is, I don't understand sometimes why these people just don't narrow it down to the facts on the ground. So if 30 Israeli children make it a terrorist attack and the evil of Hamas and justify what Israel did, but Israel then turns around and kills 7,000 children and another 4,000 or 5,000 women who are not obviously Hamas fighters in a very gender divided, you know, Palestine, which Islam is very much more gender conscious than sexual conscious in terms of the sexes. How in the world do we have this narrative that is so distorted? And maybe that's why the anger about what's going on in terms of Israel and the crimes of Israel. And also, I think there is anger coming up because people also understand one other thing. Doctor, I'm going to start with this. That the other thing that they notice, too, that people notice, is that we have a media that's totally controlling the narrative, that they're the ones hosting the shows. They're the ones deciding who goes on. And there is some stuff you can get in alternative media about this, but the mainstream media is just a barrage. It is a tsunami of this narrative about the evil of Hamas, and this was a massive terrorist attack, beheading children and everything else. And there's no real proportional mention of the massive crime that Israel's committed. So I just, those are things that I noted this morning. That's what I called you earlier about. And so I wanted to get into a discussion with you about that. Sorry to talk so long on this, but I gave you a lot to chew on. And I'd love to have a discussion with you about it. And I'll try to remain silent for most of the time here.
Yeah, I mean, you said a lot of things. So obviously, a lot of the narrative, where you start the narrative matters greatly. And this is something that a lot of people do point out. And if you start everything on October 7th, I mean, it's not as if this should be a mystery. I actually I Googled the name of an author whose book I read 30 years ago. He's Jewish too. But, you know, the Jews have more freedom of speech on these issues than we do. His name is Ian Lustig. It's spelled like Ian, but I know mm-hmm. he pronounces it Ian because I guess mm-hmm. he's been ionized or something. And he's an Ivy League professor. He wrote a book 30 years ago called something like Unsettled Lands, Disputed Territories. And it was a case study of the way the British dealt with Ireland wanting to split off, the way the French dealt with Algeria, mm-hmm. and then the way the Israelis are dealing with the West Bank and Gaza. Now, he wrote it 30 years ago, and I don't even remember that much about his argument. Mm-hmm. You know, he was at the time, he was just kind of a 40-ish professor, assistant professor trying to make a career for himself. So it's the type of thing that you write trying to make
part of your academic credentials, so to speak. Huh?
Right. But I wanted to see how he responded, because he's somebody who, even though like after having read the book, I didn't think of him as necessarily being, pro Palestinian.
Particularly pro, yeah.
Not the way Norman Finkelstein. Norman Finkelstein's obviously pro Palestinian, but I've in the ensuing decades, occasionally I see mention of him, and he's referred to as like a revisionist author, somebody who's relatively pro Palestinian. So I went to check it, and he made that point that, you know, it where you start the narrative matters greatly. But he also made another point, which I just talked myself out of remembering what that point was. What was
it? I have this occasionally too. It's called boomeritis.
I know, it's boomeritis.
But the point is that you were talking about he first made a point about you got to go back to the narrative, the proper narrative. Now, what is there something else that's close to that?
And of course, for him, it starts at least 80 years ago, before Israeli mm-hmm. independence, and you have to put everything in that kind of perspective. I don't know. The other point will come to me, but
they say that history is made one point at a time. History is made in real time, right? And isn't it? And this is a question we can get into, and I know you can discuss this very effectively and intelligently. That if we're dealing with what's going on in this events that started on October 7, and not even as part of the narrative, just the October 7 attack, it is so important that the vital facts of that attack, the nature of the attack by Hamas, were they targeting civilians? Were they taking hostages just to take hostages and terror to Israel, or were they trying to exchange them for Israeli women and children that are held by Israel and other Israeli detainees of Palestinians that have been kept in the prisons? What was the real death toll? Were they trying to just kill Israeli citizens? Did they do what a lot of the mainstream narrative said at first and scream from the top of the mountains that they were beheading 40 Israeli babies, when the death toll turned out to be, according to the official government figures, one baby that died in the crossfire or whatever. And we don't even know whether that was Hamas fire or Israeli fire. But it's just so I say that very few people, including a lot of the apologists for Palestine or the defenders of Palestine, a lot of people just never correct the record as to what the October 7 was, which was a military operation, which was very successful, as Scott Ritter's pointed out. And he says it's one of the most historic, successful military raids historically that he knows of in the last many, many years, or maybe 100 years, he said.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is amazing that these people with hang gliders or climbing over fences or digging through tunnels or whatever were able to have such an effective strike, actually take over military installations, you know, for a matter of hours,
yeah, maybe, and
temporarily, but take over military installations.
Apparently they destroyed a lot of tanks. They destroyed a lot of tanks, and they had, you know, it's
but and their enemy was one of the most...
You've got the magic touch. It makes me glow. So much. It casts a spell. It rings a bell. The magic touch. Oh, when I feel your charm, it's like a four alarm. You make me thrill so much. Magic touch. Here I go reeling. I'm feeling the glow.
Do you begin to smell some funky little things going on? Let me share this story with you. It's not so much a story, it's something I wrote years ago. Read your history, people. Stock markets collapse on Friday. Bank seizures, closures, holidays take place after business hours on Friday. Do currencies or governments also collapse on Friday? Tomorrow's Friday. Will the end come on this Friday, or will the inevitable collapse hold off for a while? The next round of the worst financial crisis in 100 years is coming, people, and the government is out to make you and I pay for it. And will your savings survive a global banking wipeout? What happens when the U.S. sees hyperinflation? What if taxes soar not only for the rich? Can you survive if the stock market tanks? Look, between a stock market wipeout, waves of bank failures, soaring government spending that will lead to hyperinflation, and the destruction of the dollar's value, isn't it time that you prepare for the uncertainty which lies ahead? Protect your money now, or forever kiss it goodbye. My friends, I offer you over six decades' experience of hard asset ownership and knowledge, and I'm prepared to handle the smallest detail in the balanced protection of your portfolio. For as the future of uncertainty continues to blanket this nation of ours, I believe that I can offer you the privacy, safety, security, and possibly some profitability which you deserve. And so I invite you to visit SierraMontrePreciousMetals.com for further information regarding protecting your wealth. Or call me, Jeffrey Bennett, at 602-799-8214. Or by email at KettleMoraineLTD@Cox.net for private consultation. Once again, our phone number, 602-799-8214. It's almost Friday.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
You right on out of my arms. Still I feel you a free lover. Your wonderful charms. Lips that once.
Of hours, yeah, and temporarily, but take over military installations.
Apparently, they destroyed a lot of tanks. They destroyed a lot of tanks, and they had,
And their enemy was one of the most well-funded, high-tech militaries in the world today. You know, it's not a big country, but it's always ranked very high in terms of military potential. So that's amazing. Oh gosh.
Many people say it's the third biggest military in the world, or the third most powerful. Certainly, as a nuclear power too. It certainly ranks in at least third place, and in terms of their military intelligence, like the Mossad. So, Mossad comes right after the CIA and the FSB in Russia in terms of their intelligence.
So another thing, and. There is an awful lot of ambiguity out there. So, and part of the reason for the ambiguity has been Israeli policies over the years to make this situation both ambiguous and kind of unprecedented, where you don't have a lot of correlation.
areas around the world. But Ian Lustig, among other points he made, and this might be something that's contendable, he says that this is framed, this struggle right now is framed as an interstate war, a war between Israel and Gaza, whereas the way he views it is that Gaza and the West Bank are de facto, they are part of Israel because they're ruled by Israel or they're controlled by Israel.
Right. That's why they say Gaza is an occupied territory, right? Because there wasn't troops inside Gaza. They controlled everything that went in and out of Gaza. They controlled everything about Gaza. It had no sovereignty. They didn't have the right to even leave the country and come back without Israeli permission.
Yeah, and so who does, like, if this is an interstate conflict, what foreign state is controlled completely by an enemy entity for 16 years? But, you know, you can go back way, way longer than 16 years. Certainly, Israel has had some sort of control, some sort or other control over Gaza since 1967.
Point out another point too that the Palestinian spokesman have stated, and others, including some Jewish spokesmen who are fair on this issue, that when you really look at it, by international law, nations that are occupied militarily by another country, and they also internationally they consider Gaza to be the same way, according to the declarations that people have made, even in the UN. If this is true, they have the right to physically resist that occupation by military forms or even violence to fight back against the occupier. And so it's Israel that's violating the law when they're attacking and killing and destroying and even trying to starve and destroy the infrastructure of a whole country, even deny the civilian population of water, which they must have clean water. And this is like a desert kingdom. They have a difficulty having good, clean water. And without water, people can't live. Without food, they can't live. Israel's controlling the entrance and out of a 2.4 million people populated land. And so Israel's the one in all the basis of this conflict with Gaza or even with the West Bank. Israel's the one that's the occupying force, and Israel's the one that's breaking international law by this illegal occupation. And by the way, the United Nations demand that Israel vacate all these areas, but there was never a single sanction against Israel for doing it.
Right. You've got UN Resolution 242 passed in the wake of the Six-Day War in 1967. So you've got that. And actually, I do think that 242 is going to become much more relevant in the months moving forward than it's been in the past several decades. I actually do think that the Israelis, as a result of this, are going to lose their settlements in the West Bank and East Jerusalem. But I want to touch on ambiguity.
56 years they've been in violation of all these United Nations resolutions, and there never has been any response from the Security Council or the World Court or anything to prosecute Israel for their war crimes here.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender, pretending that I'm doing well. My need is such, I pretend too much. I'm lonely, but no one can tell. Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Ambiguity. 56 years they've been in violation of all these United Nations resolutions, and there never has been any response from the Security Council or the World Court or anything to prosecute Israel for their war crimes here.
No, they get to get away with violating security resolution sanctions, with not joining the non-proliferation treaty, with a whole bunch of other things. But there's been this policy of ambiguity. Mm-hmm. Just like they have with their nuclear arsenal, they're ambiguous. They won't say they do. They won't say they don't. But
which is another big lie, right? I mean, it's another big lie that conveniently the people in Europe and the people in America act like, they don't have nuclear weapons, even though they know they have.
Even though everybody knows they do. So they get,
isn't that crazy?
They get to,
how do they get away
they
with
get
that?
To act as if it's an unknown when everybody knows they do.
So they violate the American law and European law about supporting countries that don't join the NPT, right?
Yeah.
So they get to violate the laws of Europe and the laws of America by just denying it. And isn't that a violation of international law itself? The fact that we're hiding it.
My brain's working on I don't know, low frequency today. So I got to concentrate on this point I was trying to make without being this.
You're doing
so
good.
So the point is that you look at what is the legal status of Gaza or the West Bank? What state are they part of? There is no state that claims them as territory. There's no internationally recognized Palestinian state. The Palestinian Authority has not declared independence. Hamas has not declared independence for Gaza. Israel doesn't claim these territories. It hasn't staked the claim. On the other hand, Israel hasn't even defined its own borders. And I remember some years ago going into a Jewish school because we wanted to use the athletic fields of the Jewish school. And just walking around in the Jewish school, and there are maps of Israel everywhere. But when you walk up and look at the map of Israel in a Jewish day school, there's no Western border. There's no border defined. There's no border defined. So you look at these towns in what's called the West Bank. Are they in Israel? Are they
not? Greater Israel, right?
What's even clear? So there, you've got that degree of ambiguity. So Jordan doesn't claim the West Bank. Egypt doesn't claim Gaza. No place. There's no internationally recognized sovereign state that claims these territories as its own. Even Israel doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Can we make another clarification for our listeners who are not familiar with these rules and laws? But what you're saying there then means that these people on the West Bank, the people in Gaza under Israeli occupation, they're effectively stateless.
They
don't have an entity that can actually give them a passport.
It's not that they're effectively stateless. It's not that they're effectively stateless. They are, by every definition, stateless. And when they travel, how do they travel? Somebody from a Palestinian from Gaza or the West Bank. Well, people from Gaza are locked into Gaza. Right. I don't know how they get out.
Talk about oppression. They're all in prison, in effect. Correct?
But to the extent they do get out, how do they travel?
That don't have the right to travel in the world.
Don't have passports.
Right.
Their travel documents are issued by the United Nations. And this is a fact. They do not have passports. Their travel documents, to the extent that any of them travel internationally, are issued by the United Nations. They are issued on the basis of these people being stateless. So they are not de facto, but de jure. These are stateless people.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing to think about, too. And that also underlies the incredible unfairness and oppression and basically a dehumanization of whole people under this military oppressive dictatorship, Israeli dictatorship. Go ahead.
All right. So you have an Israeli policy of ambiguity, and you've got this situation where you have really a unique status for the West Bank and Gaza as – you know, you could call them disputed territories, but typically, for instance, if you've got disputed territory in Kashmir and Jammu in the, you know, northern Himalayas, both India and Pakistan claim the same territory, right? You have, you know, some little disputed islands here and there in the South China Sea that maybe both Philippines and China or, you know, Malaysia, that they claim these. So there are sovereign states that claim them. But what's unique about Gaza, both Gaza and the West Bank, is currently, even though Israel covets them, Israel doesn't claim them. It's never it's never even defined its own borders.
Like, so according to the Europe and America and the UN, they're not really disputed territories. They're the territories that they don't really have a right to, correct?
Well, so right? There's no state that's claiming them currently. So what is
that? Well, I mean, Palestinians claim them. But this is their land.
Yeah, okay. So the international community intends them as a future Palestinian state, but there's no current Palestinian state. There is no state that currently claims them because there's no current Palestinian state. They are the international community, on Resolution 242 and other documents intends them to be for a Palestinian state. But so currently they don't. And I'm just bringing that up as an example.
Well, really, let me ask you a question to clarify this. So, okay, but doesn't Israel tell us all the time, and the media tell us all the time, that the Palestinians refuse to recognize Israel, even though the fact is that they did recognize Israel, and they were willing to recognize Israel for the original 67 boundaries before that war for the return. But isn't that the narrative that we hear in the rest every day, is that, oh, the Palestinians are all at fault for all this conflict because they won't recognize the state of Israel? Isn't that correct?
Okay, and even
But the Israel's never recognized anything, doesn't allow ever any sense of Palestinian statehood.
Well, and this gets fudged, too, because sometimes you'll hear they won't recognize Israel, and then other times you'll hear they don't recognize Israel's right to exist, and they're fudged together so that there's not a distinction between them. But there's a massive distinction. Recognition, diplomatic recognition, mm-hmm. is when one state recognizes the government of another state as the legitimate representative of that state.
And
right?
The people of the state as well, I guess.
Okay. So, for instance, before World War I, the United States recognized the Tsar and the Tsarist government as the government of the Russian Empire. And mm-hmm. actually, they had good relations. And then after the Bolshevik Revolution, the Bolshevik government was not recognized. It did not get diplomatic recognition from the United States until, I believe it was 1933. I believe it was when Roosevelt came in, they finally recognized the Soviet government. So that's recognition of a government. Now, you always hear about recognition of Israel's right to exist. Well, the fact is that there is no principle of a right to exist for a state in international law. There's no basis for this in international law. This is just something that's been made up in whole cloth by pro-Israel people. And if you I used to do this in my classes 20 years ago. If you do Google searches for the right to exist, it's like 99% of the articles that come up have to do with Israel. There was, right. And you know, when 20 years ago when I was doing this, the dismantling of the Soviet Union and Yugoslavia were very recent events. Try Googling right to exist in quotes and add Soviet Union.
Nobody's so the narrative is fudged. Can you give us a specific about how the narrative is being fudged as comparison to what the narrative should be?
So, okay, in terms of like recognition of the Israeli government, the Netanyahu government as the representative of the state of Israel, certainly the Palestinian Authority has done that. They've done that. Was it in the 1980s or was it? I think it was under the George H.W. Bush presidency. I can't remember exactly when they crossed that line. But they have long, for decades, they have recognized the government, the Israeli government, as the representative of the Israeli state. Okay, but the thing is, recognizing the right to exist, there's no right to exist in international law. The assumption in our own political tradition is that it is the people who determine, the people who live in an area who determine the legitimacy of the
state. Do you think the principle of self-determination is something that's accepted internationally, too, that people have the right to determine their own government, theoretically, yes. and have a state, to live in a state or live in a society that reflects the will of the people and the interests of the people who live there.
And so
not be occupied by another foreign power militarily.
the right of self-determination of the people is in direct conflict with the idea of a right to exist for a state. Hmm. You see? So did the Ottoman Empire have a right to exist? If it has a right to exist, doesn't that trump then? If it has a right to exist, then what about the right of the Croatian people or the Slovak people or the Hungarian people to have a state of their own, to have their own self-determination?
So America has a right to resist, to exist, but America shouldn't have the right to invade another country that did no harm against them in the war of Iraq, for instance, right? Yeah. I mean, that would be considered.
And you know, that has to do with sovereignty. There's all sorts of international law about invasion and whatnot. But I'm getting to the right to exist. And so, for instance, at Ottoman Empire or the Austro-Hungarian Empire, I was using examples from the Austro-Hungarian Empire. If the Austro-Hungarian Empire has a right to exist, does that supersede the rights of the Croatians or Slovaks or Hungarians to self-determination? If the Ottoman Empire has a right to exist, then what about the people of Syria or Iraq or you know, other places that had been ruled by the Ottomans? So it's not the right of a state to exist is A, it doesn't exist in international law. B, it is contrary to our own political traditions, and C, it flies in the face of the notion of right of self-determination. So this has been a red herring all along, the right to exist. And then, of course, a common response from Palestinians when they're pressed on this is right to exist where? Because the Israelis haven't even defined their own boundaries. So how can we recognize their right to exist when they don't say where they're going to exist? But one last point I want to make is that, you know, it is a very, very Jewish thing to A, have this ambiguity, and then B, use it as
a justification for genocide.
Justification for all sorts of things. So for instance, we've mentioned UN Resolution 242. In the English text of the resolution, and you know, both I believe in the United Nations, both English and French are binding, right? There's all sorts of official translations, but I think English and French are both binding, which is weird to have two different languages binding. And I might be wrong on that, but the English text.
Well, one of the reasons they did that because a lot of that area was under the French control for a while.
Well, you know? I'm talking about in general.
Yeah,
there are five of. I believe there's five official languages in the United Nations, but in terms of what's actually binding, because the languages are different. But let me give you an example from the English.
I never really considered that question before until you brought that up.
Right, and translation. I've been involved in translation. Translation is tough, especially translation of legal contracts is very tough.
Semantics is important, isn't it? I mean, the way that we define words and the way that we translate words.
Well, and listen to 242. 242 says it calls on the Israelis to withdraw from territories occupied in 1967. Okay? Withdraw from territories occupied in 1967. And the Israeli response to that has been, okay, that means we don't have to give up all the territories. We can give up some of the territories. For instance, they gave up the Sinai. They gave up the Sinai, gave it back to Egypt. So as far as Israel is concerned, they're in compliance because they gave up some of the territories, right? Now what about because they're saying the resolution didn't call for them to give up the territories. It just called on them to give up territories. Now, in the Russian...
Well, territories they occupied in 1967 should include all the areas that they occupied since that war, the 67 war,
well,
I would think. There are the additional territories that they amassed with their military occupation. It would seem that that's what that would imply, right? But Jews are pretty good at semantics, aren't they?
Well, no. This is the whole thing. I mean, this is a very, very Jewish thing. You think of the Talmud. They're splitting hairs over what was written in the Torah, in the Old Testament. They split hairs over this. And does this word mean that? Does this word mean that? And so they are splitting hairs in this case over the word the. Now, in the Russian language, there is not even a word for the. In the Chinese language, there's not a word for the.
They asked me how I knew my true love was true. Someday you'll find all who love are blind. Oh, let your heart's on fire. You must.
The secret to aging like fine wine is in the vines. Syrah grape seeds and skins contain high levels of flavonoids and resveratrol. Fermentation breaks these organic compounds down into smaller molecules, penetrating these therapeutic ingredients deeper into the skin, delivering faster and more effective results. Our handmade fermented skincare products are formulated with all natural ingredients and do not contain any phthalates or parabens. Similar products can cost as much as $180. At Natural Earth Medicine, we source our ingredients from local Arizona vineyards and cold process our oils to ensure that our customers receive the highest quality product in its purest form. Learn more at our website and try our fermented skincare products today. Visit naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Here's some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3DBunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3DBunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3DBunkers.com for more details or visit 3DBunkers.com.
Me with dreams untold. Each day I pray for evening just to be with you. Together at last at twilight time. In the afterglow of day, we keep our rendezvous beneath the blue. At last at twilight time, together.
Splitting hairs in this case over the word the. Now, in the Russian language, there is not even a word for the. In the Chinese language, there's not a word for the, right? But in the English language, there is. So, I mean, that's the level of Jewiness that this has come to in terms of 242. But, you know, the Russians and the Chinese are going to, I'm very confident the Russians and the Chinese are going to be the ones who mediate the settlement. And they're going back to 242. And I think this is the end of the Jewish colonial project in the West Bank in East Jerusalem. I think they're going to have to vacate. I don't think they're going to have a choice. And the longer this goes on, the worse it's going to be for the Israelis. Because how can they justify... you can't. I mean, these Jewish settlers, these illegal alien Jewish settlers who have been very violent and who are currently on a violent rampage, killing their Palestinian neighbors in the West Bank. How can you justify them keeping their homes on humanitarian grounds when the Jewish state has just destroyed the homes of a million or more Gazans?
Well, I guess it's going to, you know, whatever happens with Israel, we'll see. Supremacy there, and Jewish supremacism and Jewish human rights crimes on a massive level, murder, assault, atrocities, occupation, repression, improper imprisonment.
Okay, well, actually, that's all the time we have for today's show. You heard the girl from Ipanema. That just means that I had inadvertently disconnected for a few seconds. You didn't lose much there. I don't know how Dr. Duke is going to handle that little gap, because I think he's going to be broadcasting this on his show as well. But whatever, it was fun. And part two of this show will be broadcast at some date in the future, maybe tomorrow, maybe some other day, but it is coming. And so stay tuned for part two of these Jews and their hijinks and shenanigans. And until then, I will be back again with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
You saw me standing alone, without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own. Bomb, 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 dang, 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 blue moon. You knew just what I was there for. You heard me saying a prayer for someone I really.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.